Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Bunganyi. Now, in most African societies, the oral tradition of storytelling was, and in many ways continues to be, an important element of our collective experience. Stories were passed down from one generation to the other, usually by our elders, who sought to pass on information about their beliefs, their heroes, the journey that the community has taken through time, and their values, among many other themes. Storytelling was in itself indicative of the communal lifestyle in most African societies. Some of the earliest evidence of oral literature from the continent that is still present with us today includes the Epic of Sundiata, based in 14th century Mali, a story that has been preserved and passed down by generations of mostly griots or poets in West Africa. There's also the Epic of Dinga from the old Ghana Empire, and the Kebra Negast, or Book of Kings, from Ethiopia. There are numerous other examples of these kinds of stories that African communities created as a way of making sense of their world and that of their ancestors. But the story today is more about Africans who inherited and successfully transformed that tradition into the written text in form of the modern novel. Even though the novel is an imported literary art form, early writers like Ghana's Joseph Okra Agyeman, who is said to have published the first African novel written in English, that's around 1911, a seminal moment in African literature. Well, then of course we have Herbert Isaac Ernest Dromo of South Africa, who published the first English language African play. The play was named The Girl Who Killed to Save. And in 1962, Kenya's Ngugi Wa Thiong'o, who wrote the first East African drama in the book known as The Black Hermit. These early African writers took great inspiration from their oral traditions, and one of the most important storytellers of our lifetime, who is the focus of our show today, by the way, is Chinua Achebe. Mr. Achebe passed on 3 years ago this month. Achebe's written stories very much reflected Africa's oral tradition in the way he structured his stories, the themes, the images, the metaphors. At a young age of 29, Achebe wrote one of the most important African pieces of literature. So today on the show, we will look at the lasting impact of his work. We will speak to Nigerian author Oke Ndibe. He worked closely with the late Chinua Achebe for many years. And as always, we will start by listening to your voices. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
He has inspired Africans in a lot of ways, because when you read his books, you really see the African culture coming out of it. So I think by youth reading it, the culture will still be maintained.
I'm called Miraj, based in Juba. I know much about Chinua Achebe. In fact, his death is a very big blow to we Africans. He has been a very good writer, very good orator. It has really affected us. I really love his writings. He influenced so much we Africans, especially, and the world in large. I love him so much. May he soul rest in time and peace.
My name is Priska. When you read so many of his books, like Men of the People, you are really inspired as a young person. And many people have actually copied him, and they feel that they wanted to be like Chinua Achebe. And learn what they are doing. It will open your
understand very soon all the problems of your nation. If you're just joining us, welcome. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. On the show today, we are celebrating the life and work of the late Chinua Achebe, Achebe whose works drew influence from Africa's oral tradition of storytelling, inspired a generation of historians and storytellers in Africa and beyond. In fact, one African scholar contends that Achebe's work initiated an entire generation of scholars who failed to understand the complexities of African societies. Achebe published his groundbreaking novel, Things Fall Apart, in 1958, and his last major novel was, I believe, The Anthills of the Savannah, published around the late 80s. And this month marked the third year since his passing, a loss that was felt around the continent and the world over. And on the show to talk to us about the legacy of this great man is Oke Ndibe, a prolific writer who was directly inspired by Chinua Achebe. Ndibe came to the U.S. from Nigeria in 1988 to help Chinua Achebe launch African Commentary, an influential journal at the time. Ndibe was recently on Upfront to speak to us about his memoir, Never Look an American in the Eye. And in the book, he recounts his first meeting with Chinua Achebe. Ndibe is also the author of the novels Foreign Guards, Ink, and Arrows of Rain. Mr. Oken Ndibe, welcome again to Upfront, and thanks for joining us today. Okay, when did you become a storyteller? What was your inspiration?
Well, I grew up in a culture where stories and storytelling were really integral to life. And so I remember one of my most treasured memories of childhood was that after dinner, my parents, either of my parents or some uncle or aunt, or an older cousin, would sit the children down on the floor and sit on a stool and tell us a wonderful folktale. So that was the very beginnings, if you like, of my bequest, my talent for storytelling.
Now, most people would say that it's peculiar that the person you mentioned as the storyteller in your family was your older cousin. Usually they would say it's the grandfather or the grandmother's.
It was my parents. It was my uncles and aunts. And then it was also a much older cousin. When I was growing up, basically my grandparents on both sides, both paternal and maternal, had died before my parents even married.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't have that gift, which some of my friends did have, of having their grandparents tell them stories. But parents took up that duty in my home and in a lot of other homes that I knew.
So in a way, you were able to hear the voices of your grandparents through your parents and your cousins, your older cousin.
Absolutely.
What kind of stories were they telling? What kind of stories were your parents or your older cousin telling?
Well, my parents and my cousins and aunts and uncles would tell us folk tales, usually narratives that had animals at their center, animals are the central characters. And occasionally, there were also humans who interacted in these stories with animals. But the hero, the protagonist of most of these folk tales in my Igbo tradition in southeastern Nigeria was the tortoise. So the tortoise was a trickster character, was often the mover of events, and the one character whose dreams and desires and tricks and games would create the dramatic tension in the stories that we were told. So they were mostly folk tales, but also my parents would tell us stories of their childhood and also stories of our grandparents who had passed before my parents even got married. So those stories also featured on occasion.
Did older people, like your cousin, your older cousin, like your parents, did they feel like they were doing it as out of a sense of duty to you?
Well, it was, I don't know, because I was young, so I don't know sort of what was their particular emotional response to that activity.
Mm.
And I'll say that, again, in my experience, stories and storytelling were very integral. So it was like a communal experience. It followed that when you ate, and you're a child, before you went to bed, your parents told you stories.
Mm.
And sometimes they will repeat the same story. So maybe my father could tell us a particular story about tortoise. The next day, my mother would tell us the same story, but she would bring a little bit of difference, a little bit of inflection of voice, so that for all practical purposes, it was as if we were experiencing the story for the first time, because the new teller brought something new in their style and in some of the details that they emphasized, right? And so I think that I would suggest that the tellers of these tales approach them with joy, because it was part of it was the same joy with which our parents approached providing food for us, right?
Mm.
So nobody would say, hey, did your mom cook for you unhappily or happily, right?
Right.
They recognize we have children, we have a family, it's our duty to feed our family. So in the same way, it became a wonderful communal part of our existence to pass on stories to children. So I would say that my cousins must have told the stories with great heart and delight.
Now, when they were telling the stories, what do you feel was the ultimate intent of telling these stories? Was it to teach you a lesson about life? Or was it to tell you about the history of your people?
Yes. Well, all of those were implicated. In other words, these folk tales were used, first of all, for delectation, to give pleasure. Because that's the first purpose of stories, is to give the audience pleasure, the pleasure of listening to events, you know, as they unfold, the suspense, and all the delight
and
that comes
the
from...
The tragedy, the humor.
And also the tragedy, the humor, to see the ways in which different characters operate in the world, and even... when we were listening to the drama, to the adventures of animal characters, we were aware that there were human characters who resembled these animal characters, you know. So when tortoise would want to eat without doing any work, in other words, was lazy, or when tortoise would show an, you know, particular instance of greed and of just selfishness, we recognize as children that there were children and adults who were greedy, who would want to reap where they didn't sow. And so these stories taught moral lessons. They delighted. But also my parents, as I said, told us stories of their own parents and of their past, of their lives as children. And so these were ways of instructing us on the journeys of our particular families and of the forebears who had sacrificed in order to give us, to make our presence in the world possible.
Right. And I can imagine you growing up, because, you know, you're not in any way that old. I can imagine you growing up that this tradition, this particular tradition, was kind of slowly eroding away. It is not as prominently practiced as it was, say, in the days of your father or your grandfather when they were growing up.
Yes. It's actually tragic, the ways in which these traditions have fallen to disuse. A few years ago, I was teaching in 2004, 2005, I was teaching at a college in America. And I proposed to teach a course in African folk tales. And I wanted to create this course where students will learn some of the folk tales that I heard growing up, and then they would adapt the folk tales and do public performances to which both the university community as well as members of the general public were invited. And students just loved the class and were enthusiastic. But I went home to Nigeria, and I said to my mother, could you remind me of some of the stories that you told us when we were growing up? And she said she'd forgotten most of them. And then she sent me to some other elder men and women in my hometown, and all of them had forgotten the stories because people started watching television,
there are all these things that came to distract them from...
So all the distractions in the world had actually led to the erasure of this great tradition of oral storytelling. And so the young kids who are growing up in Nigeria today would basically be abandoned to watch television. And I don't think that there are any parents or that there are many parents today in Nigeria who still tell stories to their children, which is really, really... sad.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of our conversation with Okendibe. Mm-hmm.
This is Upfront on the Voice of America with Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C. and I'm Nadia Sami in Cape Town. Thanks for tuning in. We love having you on board.
When I think oral literature, I think legends and myths and dragons, etc. Because the thing about oral literature, as with any other literature, doesn't have to be true. And so a lot of these stories are so dramatic and so embellished. You know, you have humans morphing into dragons and vice versa. And you have these ethereal characters that are really just, you know, it's amazing for the imagination. And it's so great for young people, especially, you know, kids, when you're in that stage of your life and you're developing your imagination. Folk tales are just amazing stories to tell to the little ones. And, of course, they would be captive audiences. It's the type of things they love. They hang on to it. And these are the people that will remember those stories for the rest of their lives, and they will in turn tell it to their little ones. And that's how these stories just go from generation to generation.
Welcome back. In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront of the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. On the phone with me is Oke Ndibe. Mr. Ndibe came to the U.S. from Nigeria in 1988 to help Chinua Achebe launch the magazine, The Journal, African Commentary. Now, Mr. Ndibe,
let's go to you as a young person who will eventually become a novelist. Do you remember the first novel that you read that had an impact in your life?
The first novel that I read moved me deeply was Chinua Achebe's Things Fall Apart.
Things Fall Apart. It's interesting that most people that I speak to always refer to this literary work that Chinua Achebe produced when he was about 29 years old, in his 20s.
Yeah, he was 28, actually.
Let's talk about Chinua Achebe, the person, the author.
You
have a personal relationship with him. You were the editor of a magazine that he started here in the USA. Do you remember your first meeting with him? I think this is actually a story that you tell in your memoir.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Well, I met Achebe several times. The first time I met him after I had read not only Things Fall Apart, but his other novels. The first time I met him was during a long school vacation when I was just by a roadside, by the side of a highway with friends, just hanging out, you know, spending what we had a lot of, which was time.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the distance, we saw an unusual-looking car approaching. And so we took an interest. And as the car zipped past, we looked and recognized Chinua Achebe as a driver. And we jumped on the highway and started waving after he had passed. And we saw him raise his hands, one hand to us, and that made our day. And so that was my first sort of close encounter with Achebe.
Mm.
And then one day I was wandering around the town where I lived at the time and walking past a bus, a gas station, and I saw Chinua Achebe putting fuel in the same car, which was a Mercury Monarch, this huge mammoth car, American car. So I recognized him and I went close to him and I said, "Good afternoon, sir." And he said, "Good afternoon" to me. And I raised to my friends and I said to them, "Now I have met Achebe in person." And I greeted him and he responded to me.
That must have been a beautiful moment for
you.
It was a wonderful moment.
Mm. And I saw my friends notice that I wasn't going to talk to them for several weeks because I said, "Achebe, talk to me. So I'm not going to talk to ordinary mortals like yourself." And so that was our second encounter, which was even closer than the first one.
Mm.
And then finally, the year I finished college, I have been hired by a newspaper, and but I hadn't started work, and I went to visit a friend of mine from Achebe's hometown. And in talking to her, I kept raving about Achebe. And then she said to me, "Do you know that Achebe is my uncle?" Well, she ended up taking me to Achebe's home because Achebe was home that weekend. And Achebe was really gracious, offered me some cookies and a bottle of Coca-Cola.
And I told him I had just got a job as a journalist and that it would be my dream to interview him. And he gave me his telephone number and asked me to call him whenever I was ready. So when I arrived in Lagos, I told the editor that I had met Chinua Achebe and he'd agreed to give me an interview. And the editor sent me off to do that interview as my first assignment for the paper. That interview nearly turned into a fiasco because I interviewed Achebe for 3 hours and my tape recorder had malfunctioned. I didn't know this until I came back to my hotel room and my friends gathered and they wanted to hear Achebe's voice. And I pressed the tape, the play button, and there was silence. Well, Achebe was really generous and gracious. And
you lost all the work that you had recorded.
I did not get, my tape recorder did not pick up one word.
Wow.
And I had not taken notes because I was just in awe.
That must have been devastating.
That's right. So I called him and I said, I apologize profusely. I said, I'm sorry I wasted so much of your time. But he was a very understanding man. Mm. He asked me to come back in 2 days. And I went back with 3 tape recorders, not one, and got a very long interview. And so in a lot of ways, he saved my professional career.
So in a way, he saw himself in you. He has roots in media. He was a writer. I think he was a journalist also.
He was a radio journalist
at some point. Right.
Yeah, he rose to become the head of external broadcasting for Nigerian radio.
Right, Nigerian Broadcasting Corporation.
NBC. Yes.
What kind of person was he? What kind of man was he?
He had great humanity, but he also had this self-effacement. So when you were in a room with him, he was often the most quiet person, but everybody leaned in. But because if he said one or two words, they were memorable.
Mm.
And those were words that you ran away with and words that were likely to touch and shape and inform your life and what you did.
I've had so many people say that some of these great writers, like Chinua Achebe, in person, never really say too much.
No, Achebe was like, and in a lot of ways, when you read his books or if you read his essays, Achebe comes across in his books, the way he wrote, there is no artificiality. There is no pretentiousness in language.
Mm.
Achebe would use just the right amount of language to transmit his thoughts. And so he was a man who had such profound respect for language that he never inflated words, inflated his expression. And so when you read what is written, you got the sense that he said what was necessary to say, and he said it in the just the exact number of words necessary to say it. So Achebe did not, in person, speak for the sake of speaking. He spoke when he felt there was something important to say, and that's why, if you were in his presence, you could spend an hour with him. And all he would say would be one or two sentences in that hour. But he was, you could get a sense that he was...
He had too much to say.
Almost, yeah. You know, that in a sense, you know, he... I remember a journalist years ago who interviewed Achebe and said that he has a clerical, you know, a priest-like visage.
Demeanor.
A man of spiritual depth, you know. And so he did not equate sort of profundity with volubility.
Right.
You know. So he just said things if they became necessary. And so if he was invited to give a keynote address at a conference, he often will write 2 pages or 3. You know.
After the keynote.
Where other writers will write 20 pages.
Right.
Or 30
right.
pages. And Achebe would capture what he wanted to say in 2 or 3 pages, and that would be it.
That's amazing. Let me take you back to when you first met him. Given the timeline, can you tell which one of his famous works of literature he was working on at the time?
By the time I met Achebe, he had written four of his novels. He'd written Things Fall Apart, which was the first one.
Mm.
The second one was No Longer at Ease. Then the third one was Arrow of God. And the fourth one, A Man of the People. I knew him then when he was working on his what proved to be his last novel, Antilles of the Savannah. I also knew him in the years when he published three collections of his essays, Hopes and Impediments, Home and Exile. So in the years that I knew him, he produced his last novel and three collections of essays.
We're talking to Nigerian author Oken Dibe about the legacy of the late great Chinua Achebe. Do you feel that his move to America kind of affected his work? Did it change his writing? Because most of his seminal works were produced when he was still fully resident in Nigeria, when he moved to the U.S. or traveled outside of Nigeria. I think you say his last book was Anthills of the Savannah, which was in the 80s when he has already started. Was it in the 80s, I believe?
It was 87. You know, Achebe was... I raised this question with Achebe in all my interviews with him over the years, the question of his productivity. And Achebe was of the opinion that he wrote what struck him as urgent. Achebe, there are writers today who have 20 novels, and most of them, if not all of them, are forgettable novels.
Mm.
Achebe wrote when he felt there was something important for him to say. So that in a lot of ways, you will say that the five books he wrote, the five novels, he didn't write five books, he wrote five novels, and he has children's books, he has collections of poetry, he has several essay collections, he has a memoir, and so on, even two memoirs, because... The Education of a British protected Child is like a memoir.
Mm.
So it's not quite true that Achebe wasn't productive. He continued to be productive, but he did not write another novel after 1987. And because he came to international attention as a novelist with Things Fall Apart, people sort of expected that he should have continued and written more novels. So that's one way of saying it, that Achebe perhaps wrote all the books that he felt were necessary and urgent.
Mm.
But it's also important to sort of give credence to the point that you made. Achebe was a writer who never wanted to leave Nigeria. In fact, Achebe would have been happiest staying in his hometown of Ogidi. But once he had his accident in 1991, okay, once he had that car accident, it was in 1990, actually, it was clear that he could not get the medical attention that he needed had he lived in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
So it became necessary for him to live in the U.S. I think that when a writer is removed from the soil where he feels most spiritually nourished, that it affects that writer's productivity or the quality of the writer's work. And so I think that maybe if Achebe had stayed in Nigeria, he might have written another novel, perhaps two. But Achebe made the best of the circumstances that were dealt to him. As I said, he was a teacher, and Achebe always saw teaching as part of his role.
Mm-hmm.
As an intellectual and writer. So he remained a teacher until his death. He produced several collections of essays and also memoirs.
And with that, we come to the end of our program today. And thank you very much, Oken Dibe. Oken Dibe is an author of numerous books, including his recent memoir, Never Look an American in the Eye. He's also the author of two other books, Arrows of Rain and Foreign Gods, Inc. And thank you to our listeners who tuned in today. Check us out on Facebook. Type in keywords, Upfront Africa VOA. Let's talk again next week, same time, right here on The Voice of America. Goodbye.
Stay tuned for African News.